We're back at Money Life at Morningstar, and I'm joined right now by Nate Velarde, Portfolio Manager at Chautauqua Capital. Chautauqua Capital, known for its international investing. And if you want to learn more about the firm, Chautauqua, good luck spelling it, ChautauquaCapital.com. Lots of AUs in there. ChautauquaCapital.com. Nate Velarde, it's good to have you back on Money Life. Thanks for joining me at Morningstar.
Great to be here, Chuck. Thank you.
So when it comes to this market and international investing, one of the things that I keep finding as I talk to guys who are investing overseas is there's kind of no middle ground. I find the folks who love developed or hate developed. I find the folks who loved emerging or hate emerging, but there's not much middle ground. It's like you're either in or you're out. So where are you right now on your take on international markets?
Yeah, I mean, we run a diversified portfolio. I would say 25% of our portfolio is in the emerging markets, but we take the approach of it starts with the company first in terms of the business as opposed to its address on its mailbox. So we're more interested in finding good quality franchises no matter where they're located. But as I mentioned, we're finding a lot of, you know, good companies in the emerging markets, and they make up a roughly 25% of our portfolio at the moment.
When you're looking for good companies, even if you're starting at the bottoms up level, I mean, everybody's affected right now by inflation. Every central bank is dealing with inflation, although we only talk about the Fed here. So are there businesses that because of the big picture, you've had to change your opinion on? You may like the company, but you can have good company, bad stock at any given time. So have the conditions that are making the headlines turned more good companies into bad stocks?
I guess I'm not to sound like an adult diaper salesman, but, you know, it depends, right? I mean, we're focused on businesses that are exposed to a growth trend and possess competitive advantages that often manifest itself in terms of pricing power. And therefore, we believe that our portfolio is extremely well positioned in this environment. You talk about inflation, but I think the other sort of fear in the market is sort of lowering of growth expectations around the world. So if you could imagine, if you're focused on trying to find, you know, companies exposed to secular growth trends plus have margin resilience, you know, those are the companies that you want to own in this particular environment.
One of the other things that's been talked about, although not a lot on my show, and maybe I need to change that here, is deglobalization. Now, I'm old enough to remember when globalization was everybody's buzzword, and it was the only thing that any company anywhere in the world seemed to want. But now there's a lot that's pushing against that. How is deglobalization affecting international investing?
Well, actually, it improves the overall case for international investing. And, you know, the case for international, or one of the big tenets of international investing, is that you want to diversify your portfolio so that you lower the overall volatility of your overall asset allocation mix. And if you imagine, this is kind of a geeky argument, but if correlations are declining because of deglobalization, it actually increases the case for making a higher allocation to international equities at this point.
Okay, that's the portfolio case. What does it do? I mean, if you're looking at a company in a business that is trying to be a little less global, mm-hmm. What does that do for you as you're looking for its growth prospects and all the rest? I mean, can it be as viable? Or I recognize it may be a case-by-case basis, but how much does it upset the apple cart?
Well, I mean, deglobalization is going to leave impacts in a number of ways. First is it's going to raise, you know, in order to pay for deglobalization, it's just another buzzword for building in resilience to your supply chain or your manufacturing base. So that means that capital expenditures are probably going to go up for a lot of companies as they build duplicate supply chains and manufacturing facilities. And it's also some pressure on margins because you're trying to run redundant, you know, a redundant level of costs. And so it goes back to, again, looking for companies that have businesses that are margin resilient than the average company. And, you know, that's something that we're particularly focused on given the twin forces of inflation that could be stickier, plus, you know, those negative margin impact of deglobalization.
When you consider where we've been with war, et cetera, I mean, the hope, I think just from a humanitarian perspective, was once there was war that it would be at least over with quickly. As it has dragged on, has this become a normal time? I mean, are we looking at it that despite that overhang, this is normal for international businesses now?
In terms of the inflation of impacts of from the war in Ukraine?
Well, that and just kind of the overhang on what it's done to supply chains, what it's done to prospects for business and expansion or lack of expansion, all the rest.
Yeah, we take an optimistic view on the world. And actually, you see it in Europe, the fact that you can go from a whole continent that was so dependent upon cheap Russian gas within a year has managed to wean itself off with, I would think, better than expected, outcomes in terms of what has happened so far, in terms of the impact on the company. So companies, like people, are able to adapt to new environments. And it's our job as active managers to find those companies that are able to adapt quicker and put them in our portfolios.
Will Russia ever be investable again?
I mean, Russia, in terms of requiring any type of international finance, that has to interact with the outside world, it's hard to say from now. It's dependent upon a number of things that are above my pay grade, like if there was a regime change or they could rejoin sort of the global family of nations as someone that's a rational actor.
Let's talk about the other big geopolitical actor, that of course being China. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of talk there. As an international investor, you now of course have the choice of, am I going to buy China with A shares? Am I going to try to buy China in other ways? Has that done anything? I mean, have we seen radical changes in the way China is interacting and the way you want to play China at this point?
Well, just like you said, it tends to be pretty binary, people's views on China. There's a camp that says it's uninvestable and therefore people don't own China. But over the long run, given its outsized importance to the global economy, we believe it's going to be a long-term mistake to be actually naked China. So, it's about investing in the right companies within China, that are aligned with government policy, such as the Chinese government wants to transition its economy from investment-led to consumption-led. And also one priority, given its rapidly aging demographics, is to invest in Chinese healthcare companies, is something else that we've done. So we're comfortable with our exposure to China from a bottoms-up perspective, because they're somewhat out of the crosshairs of the geopolitical tensions that you have been talking about.
Last question. Are international markets and international central banks ahead of or behind the Fed, in your opinion, in terms of which economies can emerge from this first?
Well, I think the proof point was last year. Emerging market central banks in particular were ahead of the Fed in terms of preemptively raising rates, up to 6 months. And so the proof point was that at its worst, U.S. treasuries were down 10%, whereas the sovereign bonds of certain emerging market countries were down half that. So which shows better macro financial management on behalf of those central banks. So I think that they've done a very good job, and they are ahead of the Fed in terms of the rate tightening cycle.
Nate, great stuff. Thanks so much for taking time out of the Morningstar Investment Conference to join me.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Chuck.
That's Nate Velarde, Portfolio Manager at Chautauqua Capital. For more information, chautauquacapital.com. And for more of Money Life at the Morningstar Investment Conference, stick around, because we'll be right back.